Welcome back to Relentless, guys. I'm so happy that you joined us for another episode. If this is your first time, thank you so much for coming on board. I hope that you will find some information today that will help you become relentless in your physical, mental, and emotional well-being. And today's topic I specifically chose because I am trying to find ways to help my clients reduce their chronic stress. And what other capacity in life can bring about a lot of stress than a storm in a marriage?
Yes.
How's that for a segue?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So my guest today is Emily, and we are going to talk about your book, Through the Storm.
Yes. I'm so excited to show you guys this today.
Before we get into the book, I do always like to share with everyone what your background is, your education, your training, and all that. So tell us a little bit about that.
So just a little bit of background about me is, so currently I'm a licensed therapist, and I tend to just really gravitate to what most people think is crazy, but relationships and marriages. And that all sparked from just this mindset of watching people interact with each other. That I do a lot of individual sessions, but I do like seeing the dynamics of relationships and people growing together. So I was kind of in undergrad trying to figure out what I wanted to do with a counseling career. I rushed through undergrad in 3 years because I knew I wanted to be a counselor, and you can do nothing in this world with a bachelor's in psychology. So I went straight into my master's program, and it's really in my master's program, which actually I got married right before I started my first year in my master's program. And I had told Matt, and we'll talk about Matt a little later, but I told him, are you sure you want to marry someone who wants to
Warned him.
I warned him.
A fair warning.
I did. Like, I gave him all the chances. Run for your life.
Right.
But so that was when we were younger. We're about to be married 14 years. But I went into just education. I got my Christian counseling degree for my master's so that I could have that extra focus on people who need some spiritual guidance, being able to help them in that capacity as well. So that's a little bit of my background. I have my license. I currently have my own private practice. Before I did this, I was with two other private practices that I worked for. And just the past 2 years, decided to venture out and try this thing on my own. And I'm really just enjoying it.
We're in the same boat when it comes to that. I was the same way. I worked for a company doing body work for many years. And I always wanted to be on my own.
Yeah.
It's just it's a hard move to make when you have children, responsibilities, and you have what you think is regular, you know, income. But what I found, and I'm sure what you find, is I want to manage my people the way I feel led to manage them.
Yes.
And that's what kind of pushed me into going as a solo practitioner, is I know I can do more. I can have my time scheduled the way I want to help people in a better way.
Right.
I'm sure that's what you find as a solo practitioner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of what we do is very similar when it comes to putting our clients' needs first. And where that gets tricky with your own personal life is that you become so good at putting your clients' needs first. And that's what I was doing when I worked at private practice, is I overworked myself and I overextended myself until I got to a point where I realized that that's not good for my clients. I don't bring them and give them my best when I'm not emotionally and physically taking care of myself.
Right. Well, we never always have it figured out. And we have to learn by mistake sometimes.
Oh.
Although, luckily, I had some people in my path when I went on my own and just early on in life, and said, if you want to do this well, do it this way.
Yeah.
Managing your time.
Yeah.
Following a schedule, having people, you know, book online, just different things like that. So, but we're getting off into being an entrepreneur, which we can talk about all day, but we need to get into the marriage topic.
Yes.
So it's one of those topics. It's very interesting when you get people to start, either they won't talk about it because they don't want to admit that they have a problem.
Right.
Because our relationship is perfect.
Right.
And it looks so on Facebook and Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
Or the flip side is they tell you way more than you want to know.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure you've seen all of those paradigms happen. But you said you started out from the beginning with a desire to help couples. Mm-hmm. Did that come from past experiences, or was it just where your heart was led in the beginning because you saw the need?
So a lot of that comes, and I won't get too far into that, but a lot of that started with me growing up in a single parent household. Mm. So when I would go to sleepovers or whenever I was cheering at a football game or playing softball, and I would see all my friends having two parents there with them, right. Especially if you're into softball, all the dads are always there.
Yeah.
And I didn't have one.
Right.
I didn't have mine there.
Mm-hmm.
My dad died when I was younger. And so just the lure for me was this fascination of people having this marriage dynamic in their house that the only time I got to witness was watching a movie or when I was at someone's house.
Mm-hmm.
So that started young, where I'm at a girl's sleepover, everyone's upstairs, popcorn and a movie, and I'm in the kitchen watching the husband and wife and just talking to mom and dad. And I just love the dynamics of two people.
Mm-hmm.
So it sparked in that small way, but grew when I actually got my degree and then catapulted into counseling people, and young in my career, having people come in, and they really do, as counselors, people really do share their dirt.
Yes.
Like, it is not, it's a different world.
Yes,
it's everything that I was hoping, but I don't know if I was ready for it
right
up front. People were telling me things, and I was overwhelmed with not just that I didn't want to hear it, I wanted desperately to help.
They had a need and you wanted to know the right way to fill the need.
And that's where I think I realized it was my calling. Like it's what I felt called to do, because there's a lot of other counselors I'll talk to and everybody kind of has their niche of their specialty.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, I don't want anything to do with that.
Right, yeah.
You help the marriages. I'm going to be over here helping with this.
Yeah.
So that's when I realized, oh, I guess I have a specific gifting that I actually like diving in to areas where people are like, that looks like a hot mess.
Which it is.
I'll run away from
that. Because you put two humans together, it's going to happen. It's inevitable.
Yes.
If you think it's not, or you say it's not, we know you're lying.
Yes. I have so many marriages that in the middle of our sessions when they're arguing, they will say, like, they'll leave or someone walks out and they're like, I bet you've never had a couple who one of them walked out. And I'm like, every couple that walks out thinks that, like,
it's, they're the only one.
It is. You're meeting people in the middle of volcanic.
Right. Yep.
Conflict.
Yeah. And so with your book, and it's Through the Storm, make sure you get a copy. We'll be doing some giveaways later. But one of the first things you talked about in the book is not so much the people you're going to be working with, but it's actually us on the outside of that, of how to help and how to be in that paradigm. And so talk a little bit about that when you are that person that has a friend or a coworker or someone in your sphere of influence. Sometimes our knee-jerk reaction is like you said, hot mess. I don't know what to do with that. So before we get into working on our relationships, what do we do if we have that friend that's going through something? What are some tips you could give?
Yes, a friend or a family member.
Mm-hmm.
We all have that family member that's going through something and we don't know what to say. We don't know how to help. But I use this imagery through the storm throughout the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the examples that ties into that is when there is a catastrophic storm in a particular city, in a state, it seems like we all band together.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
Red Cross shows up, the soldiers fly in, communities pour in, we donate money so that we can help.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're going through a marital crisis, there is no one that shows
Crickets.
Up at your door. Nobody's doing a GoFundMe because I will tell you the honest truth that when you go through a marital struggle, you go through a financial struggle too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nobody does a GoFundMe. And what would it look like if I put up a GoFundMe? Matt and I are going
marriage.
Through a difficult time.
Right.
I need a
but
week
legit.
Off of work.
Yeah,
but it is.
Yeah.
You go through seasons. And so that's a lot of the reason why I'm hoping that readers are either going through something themselves or you're reading this because somebody in your life is either right now or will go through a storm and they need you.
You can learn how to help.
We need to show up.
Yeah.
communities, we need to do a better job. I don't actually think churches know what to do. Mm-hmm. We don't know how to love people that are in the middle of their mess.
Right.
We don't know how to, if someone is sick or has cancer or is going through something, we will sign up for a meal train. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we will, if someone has a baby, we'll deliver food to their mm-hmm. house, deliver groceries. But a marital storm, we non-verbally tell our friends that are going through something, mm-hmm. Call me if you guys get through this, and I would love to hang out again.
Right.
But your radio silent.
Right. It makes the situation worse.
Yes.
Because then you literally feel abandoned.
Right.
On multiple levels.
Yes.
If that issue is in the marriage, then you feel abandoned by your friends.
Right.
And not intentionally, it's just it's true ignorance.
Right.
So hopefully, like you said, not only the capacity in this book is to help individuals going through a storm,
yeah.
but if you have someone that you love and care for going through that storm, here's how you can learn how to help them.
Right.
I think that's a great aspect.
And I hope this book really helps other mental health professionals like me be able to have this on
your
shelves.
Because it's going to be part of their sessions.
This is supposed to meet couples. So I'd love for church leaders, I would love for mental health professionals, mm-hmm. and everyone that just has a copy on your shelf. I hope it sits on your shelf and then somewhere in your life, you meet someone and you say, this is for you.
Yes.
I'll get my own copy.
Well, I love one of the things in your book. I love how just down to earth and real you are with your talk, and you don't try to like fancy it up and shop talk in the mental health world.
Yeah.
Because that's not how we are as regular people.
Right.
So there's a lot of self-help books for marriage.
Yep.
And some tips and tricks when you're first married and you're
young,
whatever, and here's a to-do list, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's, great. I hope they do that. Preparation
yes.
is key. A plan is key. We'll talk about that later. But I love the phrase that you use. This book is called, I'm not sure what to do next, and this marriage feels hopeless book.
Yep.
So that's what this book is all about.
Right.
I don't know what to do next.
Yep.
I feel hopeless. We're drowning. And that's what we're going to find out is how to help that.
Yes.
Yes, that's good. I like it because it's true.
Yes.
It's the truth. So first, let's just start off the bat with one of the hardest things I would think to deal with in a marriage is unfaithfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And in your book, I know as soon as I said that, our brains go immediately to one aspect of unfaithfulness.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
But, so that's the easy one. That's the one that we know.
Right.
Hard to deal with.
Yeah.
But you talk about other ways that we are unfaithful. So describe
yes.
some of those.
Okay, well, this is kind of going to be either the statement that kills me or like you're either going to love me or hate me for this.
Yeah.
But, and this is something you're not going to see in every other marriage help book, but it's pretty much my stance right now. And it comes from my experience watching others and my experience in my own life. Unfaithfulness mm-hmm. is bigger than mine and your definition of what unfaithfulness is.
Mm-hmm.
Unfaithfulness is any time we put something before our relationship with our spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be someone who has a gambling problem.
Mm-hmm.
That can be someone who's struggling with an alcohol or substance abuse addiction. That can be someone who's struggling with pornography. And that can also be our typical adultery when it comes to unfaithfulness.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many types. The one that I think has been striking a lot of my female readers and some male readers as well is that I use the word neglect mm-hmm. as unfaithfulness. And I don't think many people have heard that before.
Mm.
And so they had said to me, I didn't think that I really, I was one of the people that is suffering in any way.
Right.
But when you said the word neglect, it all of a sudden hit me.
Yeah.
Because neglect is when we make our spouse feel invisible,
mm-hmm.
when they feel like they're not noticed anymore,
mm-hmm.
people who've been married 20, 30 years, and they just feel like I'm living with a roommate.
Yeah. I think so many times that we experience things and we just don't know how to verbalize what it is we're feeling. And I've heard this before. People start having trouble in marriage and they're fussing about these so inconsequential things, like leaving the socks on the floor or just stupid things. But and that's obviously not what the problem is. It's that's the only thing they can put their hands on to complain about or to show someone,
right,
I'm frustrated with you over this. But they don't understand how to put their finger on, you haven't talked to me in weeks.
Right.
And so I think I'm so big on having people seek out professionals in whatever issue it is they're dealing with, whether it's physical, mental,
right.
whatever. And that's where you would come into play is, let me help you put this in a framework to where you can both understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Because life gets busy and we have children and work, and all of a sudden a year goes by and we haven't dealt with the real thing.
Right.
And like 50 of these other little things are just making us mad at each other.
Yep.
And we've lost that time now
yeah.
to fix the real thing.
Yes.
So one question I think would be good for people is, how do we know when we're to the point where we need to seek professional help? How do we know if we're just getting on each other's nerves and need to get over our little spell of annoying each other?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay, we need to like seek professional help to get this resolved before it turns into a big unforgivable issue.
Right.
How does someone tell that?
Well, the advice that I would give, and I use this imagery in the book, and I use it just when I talk about therapy a lot, is this aspect of what we do. How do you know when you need to take your car in to get it fixed?
Mm-hmm.
And how you know is something's not right. It's mm-hmm. making a sound. Mm-hmm. It's got a check engine light, or one of the lights are going off, or something's not working mm-hmm. just right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we kind of, if you're someone who wants to fix it yourself, totally fine. That's my husband. He's going to research to make sure, can I fix it
right.
on my own before I go and take it to someone else to
right.
fix it? You can do that at home.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we need to be able to take it in. If I take our car to a mechanic, I have no vocabulary.
Right.
I have no idea what I'm talking about. The only thing I can do is I can say, my car makes this sound.
Right.
And I just don't know what's happening.
Again,
can you tell
me? Sphere of influence to communicate
yes.
what it is. Yeah.
And so that makes sense to you and I
yeah.
when I'm talking about a car.
Right.
But when I talk about relationships and I talk about people, it doesn't, we're like, no, we can make it work. And I'm telling people, you are walking with your gaslight, blinking.
Right.
And anybody would say, turn over and fuel up.
Mm-hmm.
And our relationships are the same way. Our individual life is the same way. So how I would tell someone, should you go and seek help? First, you can try it on your own. You can read books. One of the reasons I wrote this book is because
a step in that direction.
It's a step towards
right.
help.
Mm-hmm.
You can seek help on your own. But if you go and if I take my car to a mechanic, I tend to get answers easier and
right.
faster
yes.
because they do this all day long.
They have the lens to be able to see
yes.
quickly
they
and specifically.
Can see. I can only see surface level problems and they see it at its core. Same things happens with me when someone comes to see me, when a couple comes in, is I can go straight to the root where when you guys have an argument at home, you have the same argument every Tuesday about the trash
right.
not being taken out.
Right.
And I'm saying, why does talking about the trash bother you guys
right.
so much? Like, let's go one step
yeah.
further. So that's
yeah.
kind of where I would take that is, just if something doesn't feel right,
mm-hmm.
it's probably when you want to go see a professional
mm-hmm.
and be able to ask, I don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, is our car totaled? Is our marriage totaled?
Right.
Or is this salvageable?
Yeah.
And it makes people feel better for me to just say,
You're okay. yeah.
You're in a season.
Yeah.
You're in a storm.
I always compare everything to the body because that's my specialty. It's the same exact thing with the body. When you have these symptoms, it is simply your body's only means of communication to you
yeah.
that something's up.
Right.
Something needs attention. Pain is not bad.
Yeah.
It's your body communicating, hey, something's off.
Yeah.
So take care of it. And if you don't listen to it, then it gets louder. And then it might duplicate itself on the other side.
Yes.
So it starts to bleed into the other relationships, like with the children, I would assume.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's a great comparison is if something just doesn't feel right, go... What harm could it bring to go have a session,
yeah.
talk to someone unbiased, not in the kitchen where the trash can is that you're so mad about,
yes.
and just kind of go from there and see what happens.
Yes.
And can you give me a couple examples maybe of things you've had your clients come to you and they're thinking it's this one thing, but, oh, no, by the way, it's actually this, and then that gets taken care of and the little things fall away?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, one is I notice that if people go through a life transition,
mm-hmm.
any life stage transition
mm-hmm.
is kind of what I call it,
mm-hmm.
is when you probably need some type of marital check-in
yes.
or relational check-in.
Yeah.
And so because anytime there's an identity shift where we move from being husband and wife to now father and
mm-hmm.
mom, and you don't want to lose those other titles,
mm-hmm.
then our when you raise teenagers, not only is your relationship different, but the smell in the house is different. Like, legit. These are life changes. We need check-ins because we're redefining. But some examples of people coming in and so some really big root ones are when people come in and they talk about one thing and then further down the road, something else actually surfaces. Mm. I would say that one of the biggest is when somebody is arguing about something and it's between you and I. Mm-hmm. We're arguing as husband and wife, but the more you come in and actually talk about it, we realize that something is going on when it comes to a childhood trauma has resurfaced in your life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And me being angry at you isn't really me being angry at you, but now I get to yell at my dad for leaving.
You don't know how, like, again, I have this conversation about TMJ all the time. And women typically are more prone to TMJ because they withhold their speech because they're afraid to talk. And they go for years with that. I've had some manual therapist or other kind of that do both have their clients yell into a pillow because they need to get that out.
Yes.
So it's so, so true. And that's, I'm sure, happens a lot. I've heard a story when it comes to intimacy in marriage being an issue because the spouse didn't tell the spouse when they married that they had a big trauma of that when they were younger.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's a good reminder to remember we're all human.
Yes.
And if someone's acting out, just like your kid, they act out, and sometimes you can tell when they're just being ornery, or you can tell when there's like something's not going on right, you know? Right. So that's, I would imagine, happens a lot because we're so good at hiding things.
Right. And I've actually seen a very neat pattern that, because we hope we get married and that everything from our past just goes away. Like, I wish. And if I figure it out,
never forget.
If I figure it out, you guys will be the first to know after fix and change and make myself just the best human being ever. Then I'll share secret with you guys. But there's this trigger that takes place when we do become parents that when you raise kids and your kids are the age that you went through a trauma.
That mapping on the brain, isn't it?
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's all of a sudden, and me dealing with my own dad dying, I look at my daughter who's 5 right now, and I was 7 when my dad died, and I look at her and I just start crying when she's with my husband and just saying, he didn't read to me. Like, I don't realize the things that I missed until I watch my child go through them. And so I relive my trauma, and it's like these things happen where you're like, I thought I was over. I mean, I'm a counselor, guys. Like, I went to counseling. I got training for this, but I still have issues that pop up that are like,
And if anyone watching this is like, how in the world can that happen? Because our brain and our nervous system doesn't have a scale of time.
That's so true.
It doesn't. I said earlier, your nervous system never forgets.
Yeah.
And that's why I have a problem with the forgive and forget saying. It's such a flippant little thing. You definitely can forgive, but your nervous system, your body, especially with my clients that I deal with that have had physical abuse, their body does not forget, which is why walking down a hallway, if someone comes up behind me and hits me on the shoulder, I'm like, what's up? You know, you hit them on the shoulder and they lose it.
Right.
Because that came out of nowhere, maybe the side that they had the trauma on.
Yeah.
So our brains remember everything.
Yeah.
And it's good to remember. And again, you have that weird feeling of like, why am I feeling like this? I'm an adult. I should be able to handle this.
Yes.
It's a happy thing that he's reading to my daughter. What's wrong with me? And then we spiral down this bad loop of bad self-talk.
Right.
Whereas if we would just say, okay, I realize this is not right. Come to you and you can calm the waters and put it in perspective.
Right.
And so what would you do in that situation? Just a little bit of how you would handle
that. I think that it's been great that more and more counselors are getting an extra training in some type of trauma therapy. Mm-hmm. So the personal one that I'm involved in is called EMDR. Mm-hmm. So when people come to me and they all of a sudden, I have a trauma that came up that I don't want this in my life anymore.
Yeah.
So I do EMDR with my trauma clients, and that has helped. Not only does that help when I do it for them, but I like being able to tell my clients that I've sat as a client and gone through EMDR. EMDR, mm-hmm. so I know what it feels
like.
EMDR is eye movement desensitization reprocessing.
Perfect. So what say that 10 times fast.
Oh, my gosh. I was going to say EMDR. but, yeah, so EMDR is this mm-hmm. process where it's – and it's been around for over 20 years, and mm-hmm. it's helping you with just being able to process yeah. memories
yep.
and cognitions and just linking the way that you think about a memory mm-hmm. and changing it. And it's also helping you be able to – not hurt as bad. Mm-hmm. We like to tell people that we can't make memories go away mm-hmm. but, and trauma go away. Mm-hmm. But what we can do through EMDR is we can help clients get to a place where something that maybe is a 10 in your life that you right. experience, we can help you slowly move it down to a 0 or a 1 mm-hmm. where it just feels like it's neutral.
As a memory.
It doesn't feel like it's presently taking place today.
Which is a process to train the brain to know it's not a 10-alarm fire.
Yes.
And that takes practice and someone that knows what they're doing.
Right.
You know, to help guide you through that, which is what you are really, as a guide.
Yeah.
Through those times, because that's what we need, because we don't know how to figure those things out on ourselves, on our own
yeah.
most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good to know. And I'm glad that you do, you know, physical, mental, emotional, you can't separate them.
Right.
With every mental and emotional trauma,
yeah.
there's a physical expression.
Right.
So tying those two together, I think, like you said, is a great, great tool for yeah. all mental health
right.
providers. So what do you think are, like, the biggest things that can wreak havoc in a marriage? Do you have, like, a couple topics? I have three written down. I'm going to see if we have the same thing. Give me your top three.
Top three of things that wreak havoc.
Yes, that will cause those storms. Besides childhood trauma,
just living together.
Right. Okay. I know, yeah. Like in a regular marriage, just things that come up that could start to cause issues to happen that could snowball and or turn into a storm.
Yeah. Secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
is, and I call them wildfire secrets, secrets
mm-hmm.
are the best way. Guarantee. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you that your next storm is about to happen if you currently have a secret.
Mm-hmm.
Secrets are where the fire starts to breed.
Mm-hmm.
I think most storms have a secret. At one point, it started as mm-hmm. a secret
mm-hmm.
from one of the partners. So I would say that. I would say secrets. I would say wreak havoc. I feel like that's so general. there's so much.
So just pick a couple topics then. Like a couple things that start to happen that turn into problems for
okay.
couples.
Anytime.
Because you're thinking with your clinical mind. You're going really, really deep right away.
I'm trying
so
to know, do you want general or specific?
Just general.
Like three specific topics. I'm thinking of my caseload. I would say whenever we're in a place where we're starting to keep secrets is when trouble's about to start. And I would say doubting love, and I can talk about that a little bit if that one doesn't make sense, but whenever we get to a place where I think one of the roots are doubting love, and that's part of my own personal story, but when we doubt whether we are loved, we will find where we can be loved somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
and you're about to enter into a storm.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have to say one more, I would say probably just unresolved conflict. If
mm-hmm.
I did a general one as my
mm-hmm.
last one,
mm-hmm.
there's so many unresolved conflicts and
mm-hmm.
unresolved hurts that all of a sudden we just like throw all, it's like a bonfire at your home
yeah.
and you just like throw these unresolved conflicts in and then
some
you're like,
on it
I think we should call either a counselor or the fire department. And I'm like, I'll come. And I'm that crazy person that's like, I can help you with your
yeah.
bonfire.
Yeah.
What were your three?
So mine were totally not that deep.
Sorry.
That's what I'm saying. You're shop talking in your head like, okay, let me get down to the deep core of the whole thing.
My glasses on.
So mine were very, very simple. Kids.
Okay.
Finances and intimacy.
Oh, yes. Yes, we were that. So here's your top six if you lump ours together.
All right, there you go. There you go. Perfect. We have a perfect list.
Yes.
So
I would say that your three
mm-hmm.
are the things people fight about.
Yours are the answers for
and
why.
And mine
they...
are when they come to me, they're yeah. coming to me because of finances, because of kids. They're coming to me for those issues, and then I'm helping them get to the root.
Right.
Which is really unresolved conflict.
Yeah.
Some type of secret.
Yeah.
Some type of, you know, anyway. Yeah.
So it's, I'm sure, very hard for people. How many sessions does it take sometimes, like I said before in the beginning, either to tell you everything or nothing?
Yeah.
Is it hard sometimes to get people to tell you what's really the truth?
Absolutely.
About the reason they're there?
Absolutely.
Like, they actually took this step to come.
Oh, yeah.
But then you're like, I know you're not telling me the truth.
Oh, of course they're not. And I actually say that even when stuff gets exposed in your own house, that I don't think our spouses are necessarily truthful right up front either.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have to look. And that's one of the things that I think I do that I haven't seen many other marriage books do, is I talk about confessions as being a layering process. Mm-hmm. That confessions are more like onions.
Mm. Same with the body.
And my, one of my mentors read the book before I published it just to say, hey, any advice, anything else? And she had said to me, Emily, I've read a lot of books. I've never heard someone talk about confessions like that. Because that's how it happens in a counseling room. Mm-hmm. Is people don't tell us everything the first session.
Right.
It takes a while. And then if you expect a confession to happen all at once, mm-hmm. in the book, I call it confessions of confessions.
Yeah.
Because then your spouse gets mad 2 weeks later when you're like, oh, I feel so much better. I'm going to tell you there's actually more. And they're like, well, then you lied to me 2 weeks ago.
Right.
That's called a confession on a confession.
Right.
And don't expect, a confession should never be a date that happened on a calendar. Mm. It should be a process.
Right.
And so that's what happens when people come in, is I just naturally expect that everything you tell me isn't everything.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to work with what mm-hmm. you have given me. The reason is acceptance. Our bodies, I can only say out loud mm-hmm. what I have actually accepted mm-hmm. in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm confessing to you the only parts of my story
mm-hmm.
that I've accepted.
Willing to acknowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like, my mouth can't make the words.
Right.
Because I am in a place of shock that I even have to give a confession.
Yeah.
That happens even in counseling. They're ready to go to counseling, but I'm not ready. It's not, I'm here because I'm ready to deal with it,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not ready to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And in counseling, we give people permission.
Right.
This is your pace,
yeah.
not mine.
Yeah.
And what I've learned is when we give people safety in the counseling room,
mm-hmm.
they begin to open up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that same principle happens at your house.
Yeah.
That when you give your spouse just the permission to be safe
mm-hmm.
and not force timing. We don't want to push someone
right.
into, we don't want lights saying, what did you do last
right.
summer?
Right.
Like, we need to have this safe environment yeah. when we go through our story.
And that, I think that's one of the first things you talk about in the beginning of the book, is sitting down at the table together.
Yeah.
Sitting at the same table.
Yep.
Not I'm coming in with, I've got this, I'm doing this part right, at least, and you're doing this part wrong.
Yeah.
So realizing we're both humans, we both have faults, not being judgmental, because we want the same thing.
Yeah.
We want to have a successful, happy marriage. And I have read somewhere, someone else was talking about, if you get into a fight with the goal of winning against your spouse, not going to work out for either of you.
Right.
So you said coming to the table together
yep.
to figure those things out
yep.
is important.
Yeah.
With those big things that we talked about, I'm sure you've seen situations where, okay, this is unresolvable. How do you figure that out?
Oh, wow.
I know, right?
Wow. Huge.
Because I think we all, if you don't admit that you have problems in your marriage, again, you're lying, because
yeah.
we're human. But you have them, you work through them, you learn, you grow, you change some things if necessary, and you move on to the next thing in life.
Right.
But I can just imagine, and I've seen it with my clients, because my clients come to me because they're physically stressed because of some of these things. And they do share some of these things with me, because the power of touch is amazing.
Right.
But some of them have come to the point where I literally cannot do this anymore. And I think sometimes the struggle is, do I end this because I'm so miserable?
Yeah.
Or is it better to stay for the children's sake?
Yeah.
At least they have a two-parent home. But there's no love, there's no commitment, there's no effort at all.
Right.
Like, what do you do in that situation?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I look at is safety. I want to make sure that people are safe, and I don't think that we need to stay in environments that are toxic and that are unsafe. So if you or anyone you know is in a position where you're not safe, if you want to be a good friend or family member, please do not tell people to stay in a relationship with someone that is causing some type of hurt on their life.
We've
got to get out of that stigma. But so the big thing, my tagline for the book is helping marriages find healing after hurt, because that's pretty much what we're talking about when it comes to this question, is what if they've gotten to a place where their hurt is so deep that it doesn't feel like anything can take place, that healing is not going to happen. Well, hopefully, I'd like for you to first read the book just to let me know is that this is your, one of the reasons for the book is this is your last chance. Like, let's just give this our all because I don't want you to give up on hope just yet. Right now in our culture, we give up on hope way too fast because a fresh start in the back door seems so much better than what we're currently sitting in. So getting to the place where I first want to make sure that we are talking through, have we done everything that we can do? That is probably starting off even individually, because there might be some individual healing that each person needs in their own personal life. But I really want, I would want to examine with that couple before we just call it quits. How have we dealt with the hurt? And I actually put in the book that even if you end in divorce, this book will not force or convince anyone that you have to stay married to have a successful life. Through a spiritual context, I hope people understand that your marriage shouldn't be your savior. Like, we need a relationship with Christ to be our savior. Marriage is this added blessing. But I want people to get to a place where they recognize that even if we separate, even if we divorce, even if this marriage doesn't make it, I have areas in our relationship that did happen that I do feel hurt in, that I'm going to need healing in. Healing doesn't always mean reconciliation. I wish it did. I wish every hurt I've experienced in my life, I had a beautiful reconciliation story to tell you about. But no matter what, this relationship did happen and hurts did take place. I tell people that we may even want to separate. Healing the hurt and healing the relationship aren't always the same thing. People think once we heal the relationship, then our hurts just go away. And I'm like, no, flip it around. Like, don't even talk about if we're going to salvage this marriage. For a while, let's just talk about, can we find healing for the hurt that's taken place, for the neglect, for the abuse, for the addiction, for the unfaithfulness, for the gambling, for the neglect, whatever it is, can we find healing in that one area? And then we can talk about, is this marriage, can this marriage be healed? But no matter what, every hurt that you and I have experienced in my life before I was married, I have to do something with that hurt.
Because if it sits dormant, it festers.
And it carries into my other relationships.
And get diseased.
Friendships. If you get divorced, it'll carry into your next relationship. Hurt has to be dealt with. You see the physical side, and I see the emotional side with people. That if you do not address hurt, hurt will
manifest.
It will manifest, and it will demand itself to 100%. Be paid attention to.
I think it's a good point to just push out right now is, how sick do you want to get? Physically, mentally, and emotionally. So how many years are you going to allow this thing to happen? I think what I've heard, one of the hardest situations is dealing with a partner that is just almost nihilistic. Like, they don't have any shoe in the game. They're not trying at all, putting forth no effort, don't want to go to counseling. I think that would be one of the, if you're fighting, I hate the word fighting, but if you're, you know, trying to resolve under stress, at least you're both trying in some capacity. I think with that one spouse that's just like checked out, I would imagine that's very difficult.
It's really hard. I actually have quite a few couples, or I guess individuals, who only one spouse, only one person is coming to me for individual therapy, and they have that exact situation. And some of you at home are probably watching this and or listening to this and thinking that exact thing about yourself is, I'm tired of being the only one fighting. I think I could start a whole community off just that right. one concept yeah. because well, that's exactly how a lot of people feel.
Yeah, I see it and I hear it all the time. I mean, we have these private Facebook groups and people tend to share things and I see it all the time. And it is very unfortunate. And what I think of is if I were in that situation, how long could I be there? Because right. what I'm thinking is, what influence is this putting on my children?
Yeah.
What influence is this having on them for their future relationships?
Right.
Is one big concern I would have.
Yeah.
So I can imagine as the mentor and the coach and the counselor through all that situation, yes. you have a heavy burden of
They're
trying to quickly
to
help
advice.
Them figure it out and right. then giving them the right advice. And it's a hard situation.
Right.
I can imagine.
I've definitely learned that you cannot force someone into ownership.
Yes.
I cannot tell somebody to own their problems. Yeah. They have to be willing to do that on their own. And when they're ready, mm-hmm. I can give people nudges.
Mm-hmm.
I can give people taps. And but people have to want it for themselves. And
yeah.
so I understand how hard it is for a lot of women and men that have a spouse that they're kind of, I'm good with the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with coasting.
Right.
I'm good with coasting in our marriage. And a lot of that, mm-hmm. if I think of a pattern, is because they grew up in, as long as our marriage looks better than my parents' marriage did, I'm good.
Yeah.
And so I realized that each spouse has a different goal
right.
of what they think a healthy marriage looks like.
Mm-hmm. Which is why it's important to start that process knowing what you want. So my husband and I were one of the first of our college friends that got married. So in our house when we first got married, we're a bunch of single people. So we were like the ones looked to for advice. I have no idea why. But I've been married 20 years and we have a great relationship. But I learned how to have a good relationship based on a not great example.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of my story. But I'm always telling younger people, they don't have a serious conversation until like 5 years in.
Yes.
I'm like, you guys didn't talk about what kind of religion you want to have before
yeah.
you got married or what kind of parenting philosophy you want to institute. And that's some big topics that people, they go on attraction
right.
and compatibility and that's it.
Oh, yeah.
And then, I mean, that's probably could make a list longer of those things, but religion would be a big one.
Yes.
And people don't talk about those things.
No.
So what tips can you give singles out there, if they're dating or if they're, you know, want to start getting to a serious relationship, how do you properly plan ahead, which you can't plan for everything,
right.
but have a strategy to move into marriage having less of the storms? Is there a way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of it is just acknowledging that this is such a huge one. I'm going to try to say it slowly. is acknowledging that we are all susceptible to storms.
Yes.
Not just those people.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the people that go through some of the biggest catastrophical storms mm-hmm. are people who didn't realize that this could be me.
Yeah.
That I could make these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
That I could have these regrets. That it's so easy to judge people
mm-hmm.
When you're newly married and to judge couples. We're never going to be like them.
Right.
Like, we're always going to connect. We're always going to like the same things. And we're never going to fight, right? Like, it's never going to be us. And, like, you just don't assume that this can't be you.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though your life may be looking good right now and your emotional health is in a great place,
mm-hmm.
you have no idea the weather forecast that's up ahead
mm-hmm.
in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea the triggers that are going to hit you when you start to have kids,
mm-hmm.
when you realize that having kids is going to be hard, when you realize that your spouse isn't exactly who you thought he or she was.
Mm-hmm.
And from my experience, we all tend to have a marital experience in our life, except you that are newly married, because, I mean, you guys have it figured out and we don't. But you will. We all have this moment in marriage
mm-hmm.
where the person I married isn't the person I married. It's like all of a sudden you're like, wait, this isn't who you promised you were going to be.
Right.
Like, I thought you had these big aspirations and these dreams and you were going to be the provider and I was going to stay home and, like, this isn't what I thought it was going to look like.
Right.
And usually that's when you have your
yeah. and
your first storm comes.
And then what happens is they go through that for a little bit and they start that spiral down and they come to my office, their body is just a ball of just anger.
Yeah.
Because they're almost like stuck. Like, for example, you have two athletes that get married and they're starting off in the trajectory of continuing that process.
Yeah.
One stays on that course. One has a couple bad experiences at work, has a health issue, maybe gets an injury doing the athletic thing, and then says, you know what, I'm done with that. And then their health, by choice sometimes, goes in a different direction. Physical fitness can be a huge dividing factor.
Oh, yeah.
So just back to when we have these things happen, we need to get some guidance.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
Physical fitness is like, that example right there is almost like somebody it's like a spiritual divide. Mm-hmm, like it's your religion.
Yeah.
And this person is like, I like going to this church. And this person's like, I don't really want to go to church anymore.
Yeah,
like it's a values shift.
I only say things that I see. So I'm talking from experience.
Yes.
No, it is. It's a big deal. And I think we need to be... Another, friend of mine went through an experience. Marriage didn't work, like, within the first year or so. Young, very young. And this person shared with me later, I didn't tell them the truth about what happened to me when I was young.
Yes.
And it just balled up and started creating these issues. And so truth and honesty, kind of an old paradigm, but still rings true. You know, starting out with truth of who you are, what you want, those kinds of things. And just having a plan for how the future looks. And when that plan deviates, call in the expert.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And going back to, I wanted to bring up too, you were talking earlier about when people come in and they start talking and peeling back the layers of the onion.
Yeah.
Another great example of that is with the body. People come in for a shoulder pain or a back pain or whatever, and they tell me these symptoms. And when you were saying this, it reminded me of this exact same thing with physical things. They're telling me all these symptoms and I'm putting it together in my head doing pain patterns and how this could show up like this. And I'm like, something's missing. It's not playing out how it should play out with that list of symptoms. And so I start asking more questions. Oh, by the way, I had triplets, a C-section, and then I had skin reduction surgery. So that's a scar 360.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now it makes sense.
Yes. Oh,
God. Which they don't even think to correlate. And they've been through PT. They've been through chiro. They've been through a couple surgeries. And no one said, by the way, that scar that wraps around your belly has a huge part to do with your back pain.
Yes.
Which is why you need to go to the experts.
Yes.
So we're encouraging you. If you have things going on, do you know why people are afraid? Is it pride? Why they're so reluctant to get help?
To get help? Oh, gosh. There's the list of reasons that keep us from getting help is so long.
Mm-hmm.
It's masking it. It's if I don't talk about it, I don't have to deal with it. It's I don't know how crazy this person is going to be. And vulnerability is a very difficult thing to share with someone. So hopefully I'm doing podcasts and things like that because I want people to see counselors aren't weird.
Right.
Some of them are, but I'm not. And, and there's more out there just like me.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of people that are just like me that we want to be a part of the generation of mental health counselors that change the stigma.
Yeah.
That this isn't a negative thing.
And stop it from reproducing in your children.
Yes.
That's what I see.
Yeah.
As we hold on to these things because we don't want to deal with them, and then we end up pathologizing our children's life because we didn't deal with our stuff.
Right.
So that's a huge thing. I always go back to the children because I have two teenagers, and I'm like, I want their life to be as healthy as possible. So you have to think you're not just you.
Right.
You're not just yourself, your family, your children, your community.
And the best way to show your kids and your teenagers that nothing is wrong with counseling
is to go yourself. Yeah.
Because I see all the time parents will spend money on their teenagers to come get counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we just don't have it in the budget for me to go. And I'm saying, you don't have it in the budget not to go.
Yeah.
You need emotional health because it shows your children what you value and it shows them that there's nothing wrong with having emotional things that need to be talked about.
And so often, the reason the children are there is because of the parents. And the kid,
she said,
speaking
it.
From experience, the kids have their issues because of what they're seeing on with the parents. And they're thinking, you're a hypocrite sending me to get this done and you're not taking care of your own stuff.
Yes.
So be an example.
Yes.
Is what we're saying. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we kind of had some serious stuff going on there. There are, in the book, you have some exercises for people that are like, you know, okay, let's get on board. Let's get in this game together. And let's do some things that can cultivate and grow. Because when we have kids, we lose 18 years of growing our relationship. Let's not do that.
Yeah.
So talk about some of the exercises that you have in the book for couples that are really working together to try to go through these storms and have the exacerbation be less and the time frame be shorter.
Right.
What are some of those exercises?
So I put it together. It, within the book is 7 steps so that it can be as easy as possible. I'm taking something that's complex like marital relationships and I'm making it so that you can read it at home, and there's 7 steps. Mm-hmm. Step one is breathe.
Yes,
like,
we need
to be told to breathe when we're in the middle of crisis.
We make
decisions before we've actually taken a breath. Mm-hmm. So there's 7 steps in there. And then within that, I try to put a couple examples of exercises in there so that you guys have something you can take away. Mm-hmm. Did you say you want me to give you an example?
Yeah.
Okay, one example that I think is really good for you guys to do at home is a safety exercise. And I mentioned before, safety is, as a counselor, it's one of our number one priorities is when we've got a couple together or even individually. Do you feel safe? How can we help you feel safe? And we want that in your relationship too. Mm-hmm. So there's a safety exercise in there where it helps you, and I tell the husband and the wife to each go through that safety exercise. There's a list of things, and underline or circle the things that make you feel safe. Mm. When my spouse listens to me, when he asks how my day is, when she goes out of her way for me, when she doesn't yell, or there's different things in there, because it's important for you to know. You already might know what makes you feel safe.
Right.
You'll be surprised to know that what makes your spouse feel safe at home and safe to talk to you is different than what you need. People think, they come to me all the time and saying, we need help with communication, and can you help us with that? And I say, well, I can't help you with communication until I help you with safety. Because I can't teach you guys to open up to each other when you don't feel like, I feel like every time I tell you something, you're gonna use it against me. I can't equip somebody to be good at talking to someone who's only taking everything that you tell me and I'm loading it in a gun.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I can't wait to use that on you next time. We have to create safety. So there's an exercise in there that I think would be great if you wanted something to do just at home before you go to bed. You're just like, okay, let's do the safety exercise.
That's awesome. And talk about having a plan. How about do that before the storm happens?
Do that premarital.
Yes.
Before you spend all that money on your wedding dress.
Yeah.
Like, do a safety exercise.
Yeah, like learn each other. Learn what you need, because you're going to be together for a long time, hopefully.
Yes.
And it'd be nice to know that she likes to wear red lipstick or, I don't know, something very superficial. How about, you know, like you said, what makes her feel safe? That's a huge, and that makes you feel good as a person. And to go through that exercise, I can imagine, when you're both doing that, just even if you, like I heard someone say, do it badly. Even if you write down silly things or dumb things, whatever, just do it. But do it badly. But that person being there in that moment, making the effort and trying, is putting deposits in the account of good things in your marriage.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things going in the other with the kids and the finances and all that.
Yeah.
How about let's intentionally, before the storm happens, put some investment in building that relationship. And that's a great one.
Which is in a sense, getting your house ready for a storm. You know,
when
you know a hurricane is going to come, or people that live on the beach, they do extra things to their house.
Mm-hmm.
People that live in the mountains, they put extra protection on their roofs and so forth, because they know that it's going to snow and it's going to snow hard in the winter.
Yeah.
So those types of exercises are great, even if you're not in the middle of a storm, because you're saying, we could be.
Right.
You're sitting at the same table, which we talked about in the beginning of the book, and saying we can all be susceptible.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to make sure that we take care of our relationship. We do the foundation, the framework.
Mm-hmm.
I also think about it like me being a licensed professional or anyone who has like some type of a license mm-hmm. or specialty, in order to keep that license, we have to do continuing education.
Yes.
We have to keep growing, which means that because I got my master's degree years ago,
right.
doesn't mean I'm like, yay, no school for the rest of my life.
Right.
I still have to do these exams. I still have to go to seminars because I have to keep learning in my field.
Yes.
Why is it we don't do
it
that?
It should be required in your marriage.
I am going to be married longer than I'm going to be a counselor. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
It should be, you should get your CEUs, which is continuing education units for a therapist.
Absolutely.
You should get your CEUs and be like, oh my gosh, it's almost our 10-year anniversary, and we've only got 2 CEUs. We need more courses.
Yes.
Because that's what happens in the real world, mm-hmm. and I think it needs to transfer over into our homes.
Well, when we look at our parents, or we look at, you know, maybe a brother or sister that was married before us, and we see what happened to them, we're like, I don't want that to happen to me.
Yeah.
What are you doing to prevent that?
Right. I always,
yeah, I always say, you know, for investments, we call a professional to get our investments done. If we want to build a house, we definitely call a professional to build that house, even if we think we have an idea of where we want the rooms.
Right.
All these other things, we get the car professional to fix the car because I have no idea what I'm doing.
Right.
If we have trouble in our marriages, it's time to get a professional to help us make it as strong as possible. So just like the hair club for men, you're not just the owner. You're a participant.
That's right. You guys write that down.
So you had your own struggles in your marriage. That is the precursor for this book? Is that, would that be appropriate to say, or was kind of maybe?
I think it's what got me writing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this was already stuff that was on my heart from mm-hmm, helping other mm-hmm. couples.
Yeah.
But getting me to a place where I was writing it down, and a lot of that was because we had talked earlier about how when you go through a marital struggle, it seems like everyone leaves and you're alone. And so a lot of this book was actually written during my isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like everybody kind of left.
Yeah.
I had people that told me, well, you're the counselor, so you're the person that would know what to say.
Right.
And I'm like, I need somebody to know what to say to me right now. I need somebody just to sit with me. So a lot of this book came out of just my own season of isolation and realizing that there's other people who feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
That I read so many books in our own storm
mm-hmm.
because I didn't want to talk to anybody about what we were going through.
Right.
I'm a counselor unless I can hide that truth. So that means even if I go and see somebody, like if anybody has a reason not to see a therapist,
it is
me and all the other therapists, because we don't want to see each other and go to the networking meetings and different things like that. When Matt had his issues, I didn't want him to go see a counselor
mm-hmm.
because anyone that he went to see to talk about our marriage
mm-hmm.
is someone that probably somewhere down the road knows me.
You're gonna sit beside in a CEU.
Yes. I'm just like, oh, you can't, like, you have to change your name. We need faith.
Put on, like, do the whole, like, you know,
yes.
black light. You can't
we
see.
We need change your voice. Passports. You can go across the country and get counseling.
Because we're not normal. We're a super couple.
You can't talk. We are the perfect couple. You have to send me flowers. Like, we can't have trouble. And but that actually was a really big disservice that years ago when we went through our struggles and I had to deal with something that Matt had brought into our marriage, I was like, tell no one.
Mm-hmm.
Tell no one. We can get through this. I help couples through problems. I can be our counselor. It's kind of in a sense what I was thinking. I was like, tell no one. Don't talk about it. We can get through this. And I really think that me not dealing with the fact that I was really hurt and I never fully experienced healing brought me to a place a couple years later where I started to go through my own experience of I just didn't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't care. The relationship and the marriage that used to be so beautiful, we used to be those newlyweds, so don't look at me like you're something different. Like, I know what that feels like, to feel like nothing can touch us. Nothing is going to hurt the beauty that we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we went through our own storms, And that's why I talk about when you don't find healing, you are at risk for the next storm to happen right after it.
Yeah.
That storms can happen in the wake of a storm mm-hmm. if you don't actually go through the process of healing.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of couples and a lot of individuals are going to be listening to this and watching it that have been through storms, but because it happened 10 years ago, you're thinking, at least we're not there, but you have shoved everything so far under a rug. Healing never took place.
Right.
You just are really good at packing up yeah. hurt.
And the perfect storm is going to happen, and it's going to
yep.
be
yeah.
bad.
Right. And right.
Yeah,
so absolutely. And I think both of us, and that's where I was talking to you earlier about just that aspect of, I look at my season and I recognize that I was most susceptible and sensitive to kind of bringing hurt into our marriage when I got to a place where I started doubting.
Mm-hmm.
I started doubting, this man loves me so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly went through a season where I just really thought, there's no way he loves me.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way he cares about me. There's no way that he actually wants to be with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you talk to him and you sit down with him and I, like, that is so far from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want most people to hear and learn from the experience that I'm telling you that most of your storms are going to start with a lie.
Mm.
A lie that takes place in your thought process. I let a lie sit in my head and it became bigger and bigger and bigger. And I didn't actually really talk to, I didn't even give him a chance to tell me that the lie wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
I just believed it.
Mm-hmm.
I believed that he would be better off without me. That there's so many lies, and I actually, through my own counseling and healing, I had to write them down.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to change the way that your brain works.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you agree, I call them agreements in the book, is that when you turn and you're ready to turn back towards your spouse after the storm, rebuilding after the storm is that section, you have to get to a place where you negate the agreements that you latched onto.
Mm-hmm.
I made an agreement with myself that Matt doesn't care about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll let, you know, when he talks, he can talk more about his part in that. But we both had this experience where we had hurt each other and had to, like, we actually had to sit with each other and ask each other, do we want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget the moment where I think we actually decided we wanted to work through the storm. Because
mm-hmm.
we all have to recognize that when you go through a storm,
you have options.
You have options.
Yeah.
And you actually make a choice to go through it.
Right.
And I'll never forget us actually sitting down and talking about what we would split up. Like, I'll never forget where we were. Like, I remember looking out the window and, like, who gets the house?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? Like, all of a sudden, everything else was like, no, I will fight for this.
Yeah.
I will fight for this. Because everything is not lost.
Right.
And I have an exercise in the book where I ask you guys to do that exercise together.
Mm-hmm.
Is everything that you think is lost, isn't?
Right.
Write down some of the things that could still take place.
Mm-hmm.
You can still have a future.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was him and I's reality check as far as, I don't think I want to do life without you.
Right.
Now, some of you guys are going to have a different story.
Mm-hmm.
You had that same moment with your spouse, and you said, this is so toxic
mm-hmm.
that I need to do what's best for me healthfully,
right.
and I need to step away. So please don't say that your story is not going to look exactly like ours, but
mm-hmm.
I want you to know that whatever your story is, don't do it alone.
Right.
I felt so alone. I felt like there were people that actually would have supported us.
Yeah.
I think we were more isolated because we stayed together. And I have a couple other friends that they experienced the same thing. Is they had people that said, if you guys break up, like, I'm here for you. But we stay together. They're like, oh, just.
I'm too scared with that.
I don't know what to do with that. Like, it's awkward. It's weird.
Yeah.
I can do, like, individual hangouts, but, like, ugh, what do we ask you? Do we say, how's it going at home? Like, nobody knows what to say. Right. So they're like, oh, the wedding ring's still, like, I remember when we were, this is off, but when we were going through our marital storm, my daughter was wearing my rings and she lost them. And this is just like, and I was like, Matt, like, I need to, like, we were both freaking out. We're like, if I don't wear my ring in public, people are going to think we made the final decision. Like, because that, like, when right. you're, when people know you guys are having trouble yeah. and you are not wearing a ring, like, I had to go buy a cheap ring at JCPenney. I bought the cheapest ring. And I was like, I just need a ring. I need something on my finger. Because people are like, they're done. They're over. Oh, and I'm like, goodness. No, I lost my ring. And
Well, you get very vulnerable in the book. Which I think is amazing, and thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that with the world, because that's not easy to do, but you actually include some of your journaling that you did through that process.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. It will make people not feel alone. They will feel, okay, there's someone else, and there always is. We just put ourselves in that box of it's only me. But when you were going through your storm, what were some of the mistakes that you made during that time of when you were trying to, you know...
Which storm?
Well, just, for example, any of them, whatever one that would speak to you first, you know, what are some of the mistakes that you made? I think you mentioned one that you thought he didn't love you, but, like, real world, like, you know, did you come in and slam the door? Did you ignore him on purpose? Little things like that that we would choose to do purposefully.
Yeah.
That was a mistake. You look back and think, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have said that. Just to give some context to people that are doing some of those things maybe. And maybe not even knowingly doing it, but they're doing it subconsciously to get back or to have that jab.
Yes.
Which would be a sign you need help.
Yes.
What would be one of those things that you did?
So I wish I could answer this one as in other people that I help.
But no, it's me.
The mistakes that they make. But I'm learning that I'm more human than I realized. But I think there's a lot of our instinct. And I know that from both of us and for me, I know that my initial instinct is one that I think was a mistake. And I also think we all have that same instinct that when we, and the saying is hurt people hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
And you never understand the reality of that statement until you've been hurt in your marriage.
Because
your friends will hurt you and you'll find ways to get back at them. But there's something about your spouse who's supposed, my best friend, my safe place.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in the world can hurt me except you. When I'm hurt by my spouse or when I hurt my spouse, it's blindsiding.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about this mistake that I remember making is initially feeling there's no other way that he's going to understand unless I hurt him too.
Mm.
He needs to feel
exactly
what I'm feeling right now. That's the biggest mistake you can make.
Mm.
It's not healthy. It's not healing. We have to change it. I'm hoping to be able to be a part of that mission with this book, with my life now. Mm-hmm. I want to move forward because I would love for us to change the stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
Hurt people don't have to hurt people.
Right.
Just because that's a saying doesn't mean it's good for you.
Right.
Hurt people can help people.
Mm-hmm.
Hurt people can heal.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I needed is when I was hurt, I needed to seek out healing because my instinct is not healing.
Yeah.
Our instinct isn't to make a phone call. Our instinct is, I'm going to make you feel what you made me feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I can probably do a better job of it.
Like, yes, we can.
That's women our human can be nature.
Very, very.
Oh, yes. Yes. And,
so.
that's not to say that I purposefully sought that out. But
right.
I'm saying that mentally, I think mentally we start to think that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to recognize that you and I, we are in a dangerous zone when mentally we are aiming for hurt.
Yeah.
So don't act on that. And I would even tell you, don't allow yourself to think that way.
Yeah.
How you think impacts the way you behave.
Yes. I say it all the time. How we think affects how we feel, which affects how we present ourselves to the world.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. So that was a mistake when you started started in that healing process, what's one thing that you did that you got right that helped promote you forward with your husband in that situation?
I think owning my part. Mm-hmm. Owning my part in ownership is probably the biggest thing that I want to encourage everyone to do. That's why I said sit at the same table, mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of couples sit at the same table. It's just your chair is there and my chair's like way up here because mm-hmm. I'm entitled.
Right.
And so ownership is when we sit at the same table and our chairs are equal. When mm-hmm. I realize that even though you've hurt me, I don't put a hierarchy to our sin. Mm-hmm. You're a sinner, I'm a sinner. You've made mistakes, I've made mistakes. Instead of let's fight about who's the worst
right.
between us.
Yeah.
Meaningless fight. Meaningless yeah. fight.
Because on another day it could be you.
Oh, yeah.
With it flipped.
Tomorrow. Because I...
Staying humble.
Yes. So we have to do ownership. And I think that's where Matt and I got it right, mm-hmm. Was when we got to a place, and for both of us, I think we naturally kind of think this way, and a lot of that isn't just humility, but it's because we're pretty hard on ourselves mm-hmm. Whenever we do make mistakes. So we beat ourselves up more than, like, I don't need everyone else's help. Like, I feel pretty crappy about myself. Thank you very much. So I think ownership is the right thing to do, mm-hmm. is owning what can I do? Mm-hmm. What can I do? Not what can I do to get back at right. them, not what can I do to get hurt back, but I need to own what is my part that I bring to the marriage, that I bring to the relationship, if anything. Mm-hmm. 'Cause some of you are really in a toxic, abusive relationship,
right.
and I don't want you to walk around thinking that you deserve abuse.
Right. That's a whole other paradigm. Yeah, we're
thing.
Talking about, yeah,
yes, just your... as long as there's safety in the relationship, right. But even, I mean, emotional abuse, different things like that, if you've gotten to a place where hurt has taken place, where an addiction that you thought he was long recovered, and it just keeps resurfacing, and rehab is like a constant cycle in mm-hmm. your life, and these things keep coming, and you ask yourself, well, what can I do? I can go to AA meetings or the Al-Anon meetings so that I can make sure, I mean, it takes a lot of, you have to go through your own source of support mm-hmm. when your spouse goes through some type of abuse, alcohol abuse, or substance abuse, mm-hmm. Don't go through your part alone. Mm. You need strength. You need support. Own that there's things you can do. Mm-hmm. We're so good at pointing a finger.
Yeah.
And so when I think of what did I do right when I finally did something right, or what do other couples do, what can you do at home when you're saying, I'm in the middle of a storm, I need to do this right. Mm-hmm. Think about, own your area mm-hmm. of what can I bring, what can I do, how can I personally grow. When we all sit at this table, when I sit at a table with my husband, not pointing a finger at him and saying, here's five things that you can do to be Matt, I call it Matt 2.0. Like, you need to get your life together, and I need to place my Amazon order, and in 2 days, I would like Matt 2.0 to show up at my door.
Right.
That when we don't have that conversation, and instead, I say, here's a couple things, Matt, that I think I need to be working on. Mm-hmm. It's such a different conversation.
Right.
And then he comes to the table and he said, well, you know, I think there's a couple things that I'm not doing that I really need to be working on. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. That's mutual humility. That's ownership. That's what healthy conflict should look like. Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you for your advice, but you just gave it.
Yes. Oh,
that was great. So now we have a special guest
who's
going to join us.
Yes.
The actual topic of conversation.
Matthew.
Matthew.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Did you ever think you'd be doing a podcast?
I did not. I still don't even want to, but I'm here.
Well, thank you for being a good sport. My yeah. husband he has a similar story. Anywhere we go and people find out what I do, they're asking about body and anatomy, and he's mm-hmm. like, yeah, go ahead, go talk. So thank you for being a willing participant.
You're welcome.
But it was important for me because it is easier for women to talk about these things, and we have these discussions a lot. And I wanted to give the male perspective for such an important topic. So we know you're getting sushi after, so just hold that thought.
Getting reward.
That's yeah. the reward for being on the podcast.
Yes.
So we're just, you know, really briefly, we heard us talking earlier, just thinking of other couples, because once you've gone through something like this, that's one of the byproducts is you can help other people. Mm-hmm. If you are talking to one of your buddies and they tell you they're having these situations, what would be some of your advice?
being real is worth it.
Yeah.
I married a counselor.
So you knew what you were getting into.
Well, I didn't. I didn't know what it was. I didn't.
You're like, oh, you're gonna read about. Books?
Yeah, so you read a lot of books. Counselor. They talk a lot.
So. You're like, I'm okay with that.
But after I started going, after we went through our struggles, like I'm a very big proponent now.
Yeah.
I have a session this week.
Yeah. You know, awesome.
I feel like talking about it helps you hear yourself say it.
Right.
That's.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's weird or makes sense, but just hearing how you feel about something helps you kind of internalize it differently than just thinking about it.
Right.
And especially when you get to see somebody else's reaction.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's how that sounds.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah. So it's helped.
Yeah. And I'm sure, like.
And that's what I would say to a buddy. It's like, oh, yeah. Talk to a professional. Like, don't talk to me over, you know, drinks or whatever.
Yeah. Because that's not going to do anything in the long run, right?
Yeah, because I don't drink anyway.
Was it hard? Was it hard for you to, like, when you guys went to counseling, did you go together right away?
We did individual first.
First? Okay. Yeah. Is that what you would recommend?
Yes, and that's what I do for couples as well. Yeah. Because if not, then the 60-minute session is just a blow up.
We're just yelling at you.
Right. I just get to see what happens at your house. You need to get to a place where you can process out. And I think you were going to talk about that, like, when it comes to, like, having a safe place to talk about hurt.
Right. Testing out your anger. Yes. Testing out your anger, I think, is how we talked about it.
Instead of,
I could lash out at you all day long, but then what would be the point? Like, it would be just to belittle you.
Right.
And then it would make me feel better.
It's unproductive.
But then I have to apologize later for how I treated you.
Right.
So it's just like.
So having those individual was.
Gave me a place to yell at the plant or yell at the pillow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
And mine was a plant.
Your plant?
His counselor, he was like, is that, do you tell your client, he came home in one of the sessions, he was like, you made me doctor this plant. And
you're like, okay, this is too foo-foo for me.
They don't all do that. Every counselor is different. So
they have their different strategies, but what you found was, oh, it is kind of nice to say that out loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we can get so crazy in here.
Yes.
Which is, you know, the writing down or the speaking it puts it in a paradigm where it's real, because we can get so lost in the chaos up here.
Right.
So I'll ask you the same question. When you guys were going through some of your storms, what was some of the mistakes that you made that made it a little bit worse?
I'm an avoider.
Ah, the silent
type. And I think you wrote in your book, avoidance just postpones conflict. So I would wait, you know, days, and even weeks if I could get away with it before we'd actually deal with anything.
Yeah.
So that was a mistake. Just get it done, get it over with.
Rip the Band-Aid off.
Move on. So,
yeah.
Not talking about it means it's not there.
Not talking about it just makes it get that bigger.
It's like
jazz hands.
It's not there.
Well, it's like a sickness, and I hear this all the time too. Like even people that know they have a condition, they're like, I don't have time to deal with that right now.
Yeah.
Guess what? Your condition is far worse, and maybe. Irreversible
right.
when you do go to deal with it.
Right.
When you were coming on the other side of that storm, what's some of the things that you did start doing that were right that helped promote you towards those healing times?
Being more honest with myself, I guess. I dealt with a lot of childhood issues, like self-esteem and acne. Then that manifested in a pornography. So that was my personal struggle. And so then that just bled into, like, intimacy issues.
Sure.
And all these other things. Yeah. So just, like, it taught me to be honest.
Right.
With myself.
Did you guys have those conversations when you first got together as a couple in the beginning?
No. I'm closed book.
It goes back to being.
No, he calls himself the man, and he always says, the man of mystery. Like, you can't figure me out. I'm like, that's a problem.
Right. And just so.
It's called masking.
Right. To be technical, get your words right. So I can imagine that, like, with your children, you're a huge proponent of them speak your truth now.
Yeah.
As hard as it will be, as much as it hurts. Oh. Is that hard for you to teach? What children do you have? Boys, girls?
Two boys and a girl.
Okay, two boys and a girl. So. Are you having these conversations yet, even on a small scale? Big scale?
I think there's a lot. One of the big ones that we have is the word fair in our house.
Yeah, don't use that word.
We don't. Me. We call that the F word. Okay. Because in marriage, like in conflict, in relationships, in forgiveness, like in through our storms, one of the things that we had to learn was there is no fair. Mm-hmm. There is no fair. Forgiveness isn't about, okay, now that we're even,
right,
now I can forgive.
Yeah.
And so we teach that at home in small ways, mm-hmm, when they're struggling or when they're fighting with each other and they're like, well, he hit me first. There's no fair. Like, we just have to give forgiveness.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think bullying is another one you bring up a lot.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
I mean, I don't like bullies.
Well, but you talk to the kids about how,
like,
that
bullying each other,
that brought up self-esteem issues.
Oh yeah. Bullies are real, and the last thing we want that in this house, we don't want you to bully each other.
Right.
I mean, you're going to get enough of that in school.
Right. Yeah. So. It's a huge thing to be able to take what you've been through, and like I said, save your children from repeating the experience that you had.
Or at least try to equip them better
than you were. Yes, be more visually aware, cognitively aware, hearing the signs, and deal with it at the forefront. I think sometimes wish we didn't go through those struggles, but would you rather be stronger, smarter, more equipped now than to just be blissfully newlyweds? You know, that's a hard question to answer.
I appreciate being tested.
Yeah.
And having endured.
Yeah. And then, two, to be able to teach your children. Mm. That's what I learned, you know, and my daughter's as strong as she is because I had a very low self-esteem and no confidence. And you wouldn't know that now, but I had to learn that, you know.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing gift, really, that you're giving your children now. So as you guys move forward with this newfound knowledge, do you find it not easier because we're still human? We still do stupid things and say stupid things.
Yeah.
But do you find yourself quicker to reel it in or start the conversation? Or do you have the big blow-ups anymore? Like, is it kind of a...
We've never been
yelling. Well, you don't blow up, I can tell.
We don't blow up.
Pretty.
Go ahead. What are you thinking?
I feel, now that I've been to counseling and kind of become more self-aware, I'm ready to...
Just deal with it and get it over and start living happy again.
In our way.
Yeah, and it's still so much more helpful because you don't have to feel like I'm your counselor.
Well, I mean...
Like, if I'm talking to you, I'm just talking to you. Or sometimes you're like, don't counsel me.
Right, because when we first got married and you were a counselor, I felt like I was... How do we put it? Like, I felt like I was in a foot race.
Yeah.
And she was on a motorcycle. Like, of course there's no way I'm going to win.
Yeah.
He kept saying, you have training. I'm like, I'm just talking to you at the
But
table.
You're a professional, like, conflict resolver.
Totally
resolutioner.
Yeah. No.
How would you say that? It's like,
well, it's like when my husband and I are at the gym, he's like, don't tell me how I'm doing this wrong.
Yes.
Because I know anatomy, I know form, and
right,
sometimes he just doesn't want to hear it. He's like, let me do it wrong. I'm like, got it.
I injure myself.
Not today.
And then you fix it.
Exactly, right.
Yes.
So it's like eating healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to just do it once and be done.
Right.
But now you can move forward correcting things sooner, making the exacerbations smaller, and being able to share wisdom with your children and all the people around you.
Right.
So you're an example to everyone, and that it can be done if the work is put in.
Yes.
That positive things can result.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we talk about triggers, too. So instead of just talking about storms, like, we talk about something on the horizon, whereas before we talked about it when it was unavoidable.
Yeah,
and now
you catch
we
it
do,
before.
Yes.
Like,
yeah,
knowing your sensitivity to rejection.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And, mine is rejection and abandonment. So when Matt goes out of town, all of a sudden, like, he's out of town for work, and I'm like, because I grew up with a single parent, so mm-hmm, he goes out of town, and I'm like, he's dying, he's never coming back, he's left me, I'm a single parent for the rest of my life.
So knowing she feels this way, you do what?
I think... I was sending flowers once, or the edible arrangements.
Yeah, I love edible
once a week,
arrangements.
Yeah. Weeks
and then
I was
just
out.
Texting a little bit more.
A little more.
Yeah.
And then we did FaceTime because he just got done with a 10-week one.
Wow.
So I did the whole first semester of school with the kids, they're nailed all it. Like not doing that great. Because I didn't, I was like, I can't single parent. I have mad respects for all single parents. Yeah, it's so hard.
But you, again, with that exercise of where you feel safe, you learned, because you don't need
be
that.
Be more intentional.
You don't need that stuff. Nope. It would, one way or the other, you'd, well, I'm good either way. But you're going to be selfless in the moment and think, okay, she needs this.
Yeah.
I don't need it. And it doesn't make sense to me, but I'm going to do it anyway because I love her. And so flip that around. What's some of the things that you do for him that you learned he needs?
He really, well, besides his love language is gifts, so besides spending money on him on things and sushi and food and gifts, and like he's the happiest man on earth. He's very easy to please. But I think one is affirmation, and I don't think he would actually say.
I'm saying no in my head.
In his head, I know he's like, I don't need that, because he's so humble.
But you can see a difference in him.
But because the more I learn about his life before me, and like we had two different high school experiences. Like we wonder if we would ever.
I know I would never have dated my husband if I knew him in high school. I know that for a fact.
You would have missed out.
So we just talk about that, just giving him affirmations of just who he is, his character. I talk about how affirmations aren't just compliments. They're actually affirming their character.
They're showing you're paying attention.
Yes. And so when I affirm his character, I think that you tend to...
A little light gets brighter.
Yes.
Yeah. Sail fills up.
Yes. And how amazing. Like, you guys don't even know the positive influence you're having on your children in your home, just having that energy amongst yourselves. Even if you have a bad day, you still come back around to doing that.
Yeah.
And they hear that and they see that, and that is creating an imprint on them of this is what a marriage is supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing gift. So
we hope so. We'll see how that one
good
pans
for
out.
You. How old are they?
Toss that coin. I'm just kidding.
11, 8, and 5.
Wow. So they're the young ones. So have a long way to go.
Trouble,
so. Yes.
Well, thank you guys both so much. Matthew, thank you for being a good sport.
Wow.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for coming out. I hope that people will get the book, read the book. Just so much great information. And we're going to do some giveaways.
Yes.
So be watching for that. And they can contact you on all the socials on, what's your handles?
Yeah, at Emily Rose Funderburk is kind of my Instagram handle. And then just add an LPC to that for my business page.
And to make a point, you do offer online counseling sessions.
Yes,
so you don't have to be in the Carolinas.
Mm-hmm. You have to be in North Carolina. So how my license, a therapist is per
statewide.
State. I can do state and international. So yesterday, or was it Friday, I did a client from India.
Wow.
So neat, yes. So because our license enables
makes perfect
within
sense.
North Carolina and then also internationally as well. But I do offer in-home session and then also... doing virtual sessions as well,
which
just
is
to
awesome.
Maintain flexibility.
Absolutely, because some people are
really
to the point where they can't get out sometimes.
Oh yes, so. My first time doing virtual was because I had a client who struggled with chronic illness and she kept having to cancel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I
just
tried
makes
it.
Sense.
And so and so I went and got some extra training so that I could get certified to do that.
So. Awesome. So she can be contacted. In every way.
Every way
so
possible.
So, once you realize you are in one of those moments, you need some extra help, extra guidance, seek out the professional.
Please.
And heal and start enjoying life again. We lose so much time.
Yeah.
You know, I think struggling through these situations. So, just make sure you are finding those people that can help you. Continue on that journey. My tagline is be relentless.
Yeah.
Because if you don't stay relentless, then you don't have a great outcome if you give up. So, be relentless. Keep on that journey to find the help that you need and find the happiness and fulfillment in your marriage that I think we all want.
Yeah.
That'd be a good thing.
Be relentless in your marriage.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks
and being
for
on the podcast.
Sandra.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.